might have heard the story of the woman and her son, probably from Texas, who were experiencing a flood, and they're sitting there waiting on their roof, waiting for the rescue boat to come by. And the son is looking down at the front yard, and he sees a yarmulke, you know, a kippah, going upstream and then coming back. And then going upstream and then coming back. And he says, "Ma, look, it's a magical kippah, it's a magical yarmulke, it's going back and forth." She says, she takes a look and she says, "Oh, that's not a magical yarmulke. That's your dad. I told him, come hell or high water, he's mowing the lawn tomorrow morning." So well, we're here. Thankfully, we did not have such high water. But Baruch Hashem, we're all here and well and able to discuss something that we briefly touched on last week. I would really love to give some more focus on, which is the concept of Mashiach. Mashiach means what in Hebrew? The Messiah. That's the English translation, but what's literally the translation of the word Mashiach? Mashiach is related to the word Meshuach. Meshuach means what?
Anointed.
Anointed one. And by the way, how do you say anointed in Latin? Christos. Christos. So that's hence the name of what they believe to be their Messiah. That's why they use that term. But of course it is a Jewish term. We are going to explore what do we mean when we say Mashiach in the Jewish faith. Okay, what do we mean by that? And why do we fundamentally differ than other religions who perhaps believe that their Messiah has come? But that's really not the focus of our class. The focus of our class is really to walk away with a clear understanding of what we mean when we say Mashiach and why it's such a significant and fundamental belief to the Jewish people and the Jewish faith. So here we go. We're going to start with the fact that it is a fundamental belief. It is the 12th principle. Remember from our previous weeks, we discussed that Maimonides introduced to us how many basic principles of Judaism?
13.
There are 13 basic principles of Judaism. Number 12 is the belief in a Messiah. Okay, we say it every morning. The 12th principle involves the Messianic age. This is, again, a quote from Rambam, from Maimonides. We believe and are certain that the Messiah will come. We do not consider him late, and although he tarry, we await him. We don't say, like, hey, where'd he go? He was supposed to be here already. We understand the fact that there is a time for him to come, and we'll discuss what that time is later in the class. We believe that the Messiah will be greater than any other king or ruler who has ever lived. This has been predicted by every prophet from Moses to Malachi. One who doubts or minimizes this denies the Torah itself. For the Messiah is mentioned both in the accounts of Balaam, in Numbers, and at the end of Deuteronomy. Included in this principle is the belief that a Jewish king can only come from the family of David through his son Solomon. So it's very important to realize that the Mashiach, in a classic Torah Jewish belief, is a person. It's a person of flesh and blood who is a king of the Davidic line. It's a very simple concept. It's simple yet profound, as we'll see. It's a person who's going to reinstate the Davidic dynasty and bring the Jewish people political relief, meaning that they're no longer under the subjugation of other nations. They no longer have to kowtow to other nations, but rather they are independent, and not just independent, but as we'll see, the most powerful nation in the sense that they're no longer concerned about warfare, enemies from around us. We're completely safe and secure under this human monarch called Mashiach. Let's take a look. What is he supposed to do? So let's be a little bit more clear about what Mashiach's job description is. We're going to go to box number 2. What did he do? There are a lot of prophecies that surround the Messianic era. And Rambam here is going, this is going to be, once again, from Rambam, he's going to call from that. One of the most famous prophecies is the lion lying together with the
lamb.
So a man goes and he visits the zoo, and he looks at the lion's cage, and he witnesses that there's a literal fulfillment of the biblical prophecy, of the prophecy from Isaiah, that a lion and a calf will be together. So here they are, he's looking at this, and he sees the lion and the calf in the lion's den, in the zoo, in the same exhibit. So he calls over the zookeeper, and he says, it's incredible, how long have you had a lion and a calf in the cage together? So he says, it's been over a year already. He says, how do you do that? He says, it's very easy. Every morning we put in a new calf.
Oh.
But anyways, but in the biblical times...
By Messianic, people thank you, Messianic Jews.
Jews are a code word, or another name for them is Jews for Jesus, right? Are Jews who believe that Jesus was the Messiah. Okay? So for the most part, they're not. They do get some Jews, especially unlettered Jews. They'll get often, the Russians were a very big target in the 90s, up until really more recent times. They are a big target. High school kids, you know, people who really
who are sick in the hospital.
Yeah. Okay. So they'll, what they'll do, it's a, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it's a tactic of this arm of the church, of which
messianic times.
Right, right. So that messianic Judaism is just another way to, it's another form of Christianity. Messianic times is what we're discussing.
Yes.
Okay, so we shouldn't confuse the two. What are the difference between the two? So we're going to discuss today Messianic times. What do we mean when we say Mashiach? And so Mashiach, again, is this individual who is going to really bring the Jewish people back. It's our new king of the Jewish people. It's a leader. It's a human leader who's going to do the following. Let's take a look. Let's take a look at box number two. We'll get a little bit more clarity of what we mean when we talk about Mashiach and the what he's supposed to do. In the future, the Messianic king will arise and renew the Davidic dynasty. David, of course, is the first individual in the Davidic dynasty, but his son, who was his famous son?
Shlomo,
or Solomon, who built the temple. And then that began a dynasty, and each of their children were kings, obviously one of them. Restoring it to its initial sovereignty, he will build the temple and gather the dispersed of Israel. This would be the third temple. Then, in his days, the observance of all the statutes will return to their previous states. We will offer sacrifices, observe the sabbatical and jubilee years, according to all the particulars as described by the Torah. Anyone who does not believe in him or does not await his coming denies not only the statements of other prophets, but those of the Torah and Moses, our teacher. The Torah testifies to his coming as it states in Deuteronomy, God will bring back your captivity and have mercy upon you. He will again gather you from among the nations. Even if your diaspora is at the end of the heavens, God will gather you from there and bring you to the land. These explicit words of the Torah include all the statements made by all the prophets. So all the prophets give us a lot more detail about what to expect in the Messianic era. But already there in Deuteronomy 30, we see the idea of a Messiah. One should not presume that the Messianic king must work miracles and wonders, bring about new phenomena in the world, resurrect the dead, or perform other similar deeds. That's not his job description. If you go to Mashiach and you say, okay, I see you want to be Mashiach, we got 42 people, applicants for the job, do me a favor, part my glass of coffee, you know, like part the coffee in my cup. He's not going to do that for you. It's not his job description. Mashiach is not a miracle worker. This is definitely not true. The main thrust of the matter is the Torah, its statutes, and its laws are everlasting. This is definitely not true. Right? The main, he goes on to say, I didn't quote the whole thing, but he goes on to say he's not going to change the Torah either. The main thrust of the matter is this Torah, its statutes, and its laws are everlasting. We may not add to them or detract from them. Mashiach's job is not to change the Torah. In fact, if he were to change the Torah, that would be the first strike against him. He could not be Mashiach. Mashiach is supposed to reinstate Torah observance, all of its laws, the laws that we can't do nowadays because we don't have a temple or because the majority of Jews are not living in Israel. Interesting, there are many laws that apply only when the majority of Jews are living in Israel. For example, the obligation to give a certain tithes only apply when the majority of Jews are living in Israel, says Maimonides. So that being the case, part of his job is to reinstate those laws. It's interesting, we're getting to the point where we're almost there, where almost the majority of Jews are living in Israel. So it could automatically happen. We can automatically have a reinstatement of some of these, at least some of them. We won't have the temple, but even pre-Messianic era, we're already living at a point where we're close. I mean, we're talking about in our own generation, we could easily see the majority of Jews living in the land of Israel, okay, and hopefully we'll be among them. Yeah, good question. Yeah.
So it says that it's not in his job description to resurrect the dead.
Yeah.
However, isn't that part of him coming back?
So that's going to happen at a later point. So at a later point, the resurrection will occur, but that's not his job to do. That's God's job. Okay, he's just a human being, so he couldn't resurrect the dead.
Does this imply that Torah has a problem with democracy?
Because we're having a king?
Yeah.
So the truth is, democracy is the worst form of government other than all other forms available, as Winston Churchill said. So it truly is, as you can see from the process and the amount of money wasted on just trying to pick the right person, who's not, anyway, it's not going to be the right person, but it's going to be the best of the 14 we're given. So what can we do, you know? Like, that's what we have to choose from. All right, I guess he or she is the best. It's not a great system. It's a very inefficient system in a sense. But for all the systems that we have available to us, absolutely. I'd rather live under a democracy than any other system. But imagine a system where it was actually run by a God-fearing, God-installed, caring and loving monarch who could run the system without fear of reprisal from his voting base, doesn't have to spend half the time out of his office raising money and taking bribes, donations from various factions. So that would be a better system in theory. We're just scared of such a system because we've lived under systems like that in Europe and it didn't work in our favor. Right? So it really depends who's sitting on that throne. But if it's a person that God installs on that throne, like Moses, we'd be very happy to have them be the monarchy. Number four, if a king will arise from the house of David who will diligently contemplate the Torah and observes its mitzvot as prescribed by the written law and the oral law, as David, his ancestor, will compel all of Israel to walk in the ways of the Torah and rectify the breaches in its observances and fight the wars of God, we may assume him to be Mashiach. So if he's doing this great job bringing people back, he rectifies all the problems, everyone's now observant, we're fighting the wars of God, this is probably Mashiach. If he succeeds in the above, he builds the temple in its place, and he gathers the dispersed of Israel, he is definitely the Mashiach. If he did not succeed to this degree, or was killed, he surely is not the Redeemer promised by the Torah. Okay, so by definition, if Mashiach does not fulfill everything that we've already stated, which includes bringing everybody back, creating a complete level of observance among the Jewish people, rebuilding the temple, and all the dispersed of Israel are back in Israel, then that's not Mashiach. Okay, so that really already knocks out anyone who so far in history has said that they are the Mashiach, whether from Jewish or non-Jewish stock, those individuals are already out of the picture. And in fact, the following piece is also from Maimonides, box number 3, where it starts off with the title Jesus and Muhammad. This piece of Rambam was actually removed from many editions. So some of the, even currently, editions of Rambam do not have this piece in it. Because of the nature of the piece, Jewish scriptures, Jewish writings were highly censored throughout the Middle Ages by the church, and Jews, and apostate Jews who joined the church. That's how they were able to read it. So apostate Jews would go ahead, read these pieces, and say, this is against Jesus, or even if it's, whether it's true or not, we'd be forced to take it out. So there are pieces of the Talmud, for example, that only in newer, better printings actually have it reinstated.
Yeah,
that piece reinstated.
What? 2 days ago we read one.
Right. A few days ago.
Yeah,
and this is also, welcome. This is also a piece that was removed from Maimonides, but now the newer editions now have reinstated this piece. So this is what Maimonides writes. Let's look at box number 3. Jesus of Nazareth. It's a funny time to walk in. She's like, did I walk into the right place? So it's like on Sunday morning, I just walk in and the rabbi says, you know, it's the first thing he says is Jesus of Nazareth. I think she's in the wrong place. You're in the right place. Okay, here we go. Back to 3. Jesus of Nazareth, who aspired to be the Mashiach and was executed by the courts, who was alluded to in Daniel's prophecies, as it states over there in Daniel, the vulgar among your people shall exalt themselves in an attempt to fulfill the vision, but they shall stumble. Right? The verse in Daniel talks about those who Daniel does not see in a very positive light. And he says they'll exalt themselves in an attempt to fulfill the vision. What's the vision?
Mashiach.
The Mashiach vision. But they shall stumble. They're not going to be the real deal. So Rambam continues, can there be a greater stumbling block than Christianity? All the prophets spoke of Mashiach as the Redeemer of Israel and their Savior, who would gather their dispersed and strengthen their observance of the mitzvot. In contrast, Christianity causes the Jews to be slain by the sword, their remnants to be scattered and humbled, the Torah to be altered, and the majority of the world to err and to serve a God other than the Lord. That's a pretty strong statement. You can see why the censor says, you know what, let's take that out. But that's a very powerful point. It does not, Christianity, the Christian Messiah, does not fulfill any of the prophecies decreed, whether it's world peace, whether it's the ingathering of the Jewish exiles, whether it's the resurrection of the temple, right? In fact, in Jesus' time, the temple was lying in ruins. The Jews were being slaughtered. War was increasing or decreasing. You know, it was a mess, right, under the Romans. Ultimately, not only did he not strengthen observance, but at least his disciples went ahead and said, all of that is out the window. All you have to do is believe in him, and that's enough to be saved. So Christianity does have answers. We have other problems with the fact that we know already from our previous class about what do we mean when we say God, that God would not and could not take on human form, that God is only one, that we do not believe in a Trinity concept, and therefore we have fundamental problems with the very basis of Christianity, but even more so with their concept of their nascent concept of a Redeemer that is totally not in line with our concept of Mashiach. So they will answer that, and they'll say, no, he was meant to, the redemption is going to occur in your heart. And you're right, there are things that have to happen, but it's going to be a second coming. But the second coming is not at all in Jewish scriptures. It's an answer to a question, but it's not a very good answer as far as we're concerned. The problem is, there's too many problems with using the definitions that we have to say that any of the false messiahs, and Jesus was just one of them, is a true messiah, because they have not fulfilled even one iota of the prophecies. Only recently have Jews started coming back. Certainly that's not attributed to Jesus, who died 2,000 years ago. Yeah.
If we see a person who's a Mashiach and say he fulfilled a lot of things,
yeah,
does that connotate that he's dying for your sins?
No.
He's the Savior?
That's also, again, not a Jewish concept. Right, right.
Okay, we do
have a concept that tzaddikim have a higher level, righteous people have a higher level soul, let's say, where they go through can actually have reverberations for their generation. That is a Jewish concept. You will find that concept. So Christianity didn't make up that concept. But applying that to Jesus and saying that that's why he died, so it answers the question that he died, you know, because really you have a problem. How did he die, and why did he die such an ignoble death with next to two criminals on a cross? You know, the crucifixion was a standard Roman torture. So why did he have to go through that? So that's the answer they give. But again, it's an answer. It's not a proof. It's a problem. It's a problem that he had to die. It's a problem that he didn't fulfill the prophecies, and that's really what Rambam here is saying. Rambam is saying that that's a fulfillment, actually, of a verse. Jesus is in Scripture. Once again, she's thinking she's in the wrong room. But no, Jesus really is in Scripture. He says it's in Daniel. Daniel said, the vulgar among your people shall exalt themselves in an attempt to fulfill the mission, but they shall stumble. So this is a stumbling. This is not a fulfillment of the Messianic.
That is in reference to Jesus.
That's what Rambam is saying.
Does the name Jesus?
No. The Rambam does not say. This is just, he's just called the vulgar among your people. Okay? Now, nevertheless, the intent of the Creator of the world is not within the power of man to comprehend. Now, Rambam continues and he says, look, there's a bigger picture here, that God is running the show. So his ways are not our ways, nor are his thoughts our thoughts. Ultimately, all the deeds of Jesus of Nazareth and that Ishmaelite,
he doesn't use his name.
That Ishmaelite who arose, he's referring to Muhammad, good, I'm glad you made the reference.
I was looking for the thing about
Muhammad, right? Muhammad is that Ishmaelite, okay, from Yishmael. Yishmael is the son of Abraham and ultimately the ancestor of all of the Arabs, who arose after him.
I'm sorry, half-brother of Isaac, yeah, I'm sorry.
So ultimately, all the deeds of Jesus of Nazareth and that Ishmaelite who rose after him will only serve to prepare the way for Mashiach's coming and the improvement of the entire world, motivating the nations to serve God together. In other words, they do play a role in the coming of Mashiach. How so? Because think of the world without a Jesus or a Muhammad. If you think of a world without a Jesus or a Muhammad, now Jews are not going around spreading Judaism. It's not part of our belief system that everyone has to be Jewish. We don't believe that. So we're not going around forcing conversion.
We're not proselytizing. We're not evangelical.
We're not evangelical. We don't do that, right? So imagine a world where there wasn't a Jesus and a Muhammad who did go and do that, or their followers did go and do that. So you'd still have people knocking each other over the heads and worshiping idols. And we come to them, and Messiah would come to such a world, they'd say, hey, Mashiach's here. Who? Which one are you? Which gods? Who do you work for? What do you mean, which God? We tell them there's commandments from heaven.
Commandments from heaven?
All I know is I got to give offerings to the God of war, the God of love, the God of nature, the God of the rain. I got to give them all offerings. So I don't know about your Torah, you know, mitzvot, commandments. But now you go to a Muhammad. You go to a Muslim. You go to a Christian and you say, do you believe that God communicates to the world in his will? Absolutely. Do you believe in revelation? Absolutely. Do you believe in a Messiah? Absolutely. I just believe it's my version. And you believe it's your version. So we kind of have the same vocabulary, we just don't have the same definitions. So now that we have the same vocabulary, we can have a conversation, and when Mashiach comes, it's much more easier for the whole world to just slip into that mode, because we get that. We basically, most of the civilized world gets that concept, it's just a question of which one. So that's what Rambam goes on to say.
So basically, without Jesus and Muhammad, you really wouldn't have like the foundation of the concept.
Right. So ironically, Mashiach, Jesus is helping bring around about the Messiah, but not in the way that they think.
I was like, okay, I can understand Jesus, but like Muhammad and the Muslims and the Arabs, like they're like directly like killing us.
Right, but I mean, for most of history, so were our neighbors in Europe,
yeah.
And unfortunately, well,
yeah.
But
the Muslims were protecting us, so the other way around.
Right.
So when the first Crusades came to Jerusalem, they rounded up every single Jew they could find, mm-hmm. They put them into a synagogue, and they burnt it down. That was the first act when the Crusaders came to Jerusalem. It wasn't some like Hollywood version of it's liberated. It's murder men, women, and children, and in the name of Jesus, right?
Right, but the survivors kid in Islam is Muslim home.
We weren't so good at the Muslims either. You know, it's not like they were our buddies, but they, for the most part, they were somewhat better than Europe, Christian Europe.
Century in Spain. Worked very well together mathematically.
Right, but then they kicked us out in the 15th century.
Yes.
So,
well, we didn't.
But we were kicked out of over 70 countries in our history. Over 70.
So they have to come up with new ones.
Right.
All religions will recognize our Messiah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, part of the Messiah's job, the first job of Mashiach is to bring salvation to the Jewish people. Once the Jewish people are in a strong and healthy situation where we are observing the Torah and we can become a true light to the nations, then the entire world becomes redeemed. Mashiach's job is really to redeem the world. The whole world has to get redeemed. It's not just about the Jewish people. But it starts with the Jewish people, and the Jewish people are at the center of that by virtue of the fact that we're supposed to be a light unto the nations. Who's going to teach the world about God and Torah and Mitzvot? The Jewish belief and all these ideas has to come from the Jews. But the Jews themselves, how many Jews themselves understand what we're supposed to know? How many Jews themselves can be a light to the nation? The Jews themselves have to be lit up. So that's Mashiach's job. His first job. The next piece is the world as a whole.
But and I guess this is just from growing up in a dogmatically Christian-dominated society. When Mashiach comes, wouldn't they just say, well, that's the second coming, that's our guy?
Well, if his name is Moshe, and he's got a long beard, and he puts on tefillin, so fine, you want to call it the second coming, you call it whatever you want, but just come and learn this is the way we do it, right? Whatever, eventually I think people will get it might not happen overnight, but they'll say, a switch. I don't know how it's going to occur, but be that as it may, Rambam is saying that they're paving the way. So let's read it. How will this come about? So Rambam says, he writes what we just spoke out. The entire world has already become filled with the mention of Mashiach, Torah, and Mitzvot. These matters have been spread to the furthermost islands, to many stubborn-hearted nations. They discuss these matters in the Mitzvot of the Torah, saying these Mitzvot were true, but were already negated in the present age, and are not applicable for all time. Others say implied in the Mitzvot are hidden concepts that cannot be understood simply. The Mashiach has already come and revealed those hidden truths, right? These are what other beliefs have. But when the true Mashiach king, Messianic king, will arise and prove successful, his position becoming exalted and uplifted, they will all return and realize that their ancestors endowed them with a false heritage and their prophets and ancestors caused them to err. But they'll get it. It's just the learning curve will be much shorter for the entire world. So that's how Rambam suggests is perhaps a reason why these beliefs have really taken hold of the majority of our planet. That's a little bit of background of what Mashiach is supposed to do and what he has to be or who he has to be. Let's take a look at box number 4 to discuss the world as it will look after Mashiach's arrival. Will there still be internet. Can I still get my nails done? I don't get my nails done. No, I don't get my nails done. But I'm just saying I wanted to get my nails done. I'm just in theory. Could I do so? So let's take a look. Box number four. The world after Mashiach's arrival. Do not presume, this is again Maimonides, that in the Messianic age, any facet of the world's nature will change or there will be innovations in the work of creation. Rather, the world will continue according to its pattern. The way you'll get up in the morning, you'll eat breakfast. You know, you'll pray, of course, but you'll eat breakfast and you'll go to work and you'll make a living and life will go on. But you will have a Messianic age. So he explains, the sages and the prophets did not yearn for the Messianic era in order to have dominion over the entire world, to rule over the Gentiles, to be exalted by the nations, or to eat, drink, and celebrate. Rather, they desired to be free, to involve themselves in Torah and wisdom without any pressures or disturbances so that they would merit the world to come.
That's why they wouldn't work. They
what?
Wouldn't study.
What?
Well,
but
they wouldn't go to work. They
would study. Right. No, the sages wanted an era where there will be ease and they will not be under the restrictions of foreign dominion. But, you know, you still have to eat. So it could, yeah. So part of the Messianic era is that the verse says that aliens will do your labor for you, which could very well be a reference to technology. That, yeah, life, making a living will be easier, as we'll see shortly. That's part of the Messianic era. Making a living will be easier. But the idea is we're still eating, we're still drinking, we're still marrying, we're still still dying. We're still living and dying. In that era, there will be neither famine or war, envy or competition, for good will flow in abundance, and all the delights will be freely available as dust. The occupation of the entire world will be solely to know God. Are we living in such a world?
No.
But we are moving towards such a world. You can see a world where abundance could be so available with the technology. So technologically, we're moving towards such a world. Spiritually, we certainly haven't gotten there. We do not see a world free of conflict. And we do not see a world where everyone's just chomping at the bit to know God. Therefore, the Jews will be great sages and know the hidden matters, grasping the knowledge of their Creator according to the full extent of human potential. As Isaiah states, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God as water covers the ocean bed. Another famous messianic verse. Yeah.
Is it supposed to, I feel I heard one said there had to be 7 years of peace before the Messiah.
Good. So there is a Gemara. We're going to quote a lot of Talmudic predictions about the Messianic era or the pre-Messianic era. There are discussions about seven-year periods as well. Very good. But so I did not bring that one down. Yeah.
So Messianic era is when the Messiah comes.
Right. Pre-Messianic era.
Before.
Right. No.
That's the era.
Right. Okay. When Mashiach's here, that's the Messianic era.
Messianic era.
Excellent. That would place us somewhere before that. And what I'd like to contend with this morning is that we're actually very close to that. Does anyone know what is the Hebrew year that we are currently in? 5776. So we have an interesting tradition brought in the Talmud and the Midrashim that the world only lasts for a certain time period. How many years does the world last for as we know it? So, well, it's 6,000 as we know it, and then there's a whole 7,000, which would be the Sabbath. Okay, the last 1,000 is the Sabbath, which, by the way, corresponds to the 6 days of creation. Each day of creation has 1,000 years, and actually they correspond. Nachmanides points out historically what was happening during those 1,000 years and what was being created in that first day. They actually line up. So, there's and by the way, there's the 7,000th year, and the 7,000th year corresponds to what day of the week?
Shabbat.
So in a sense then, all of creation is kind of vacuum-packed, all of human history is vacuum-packed into that first column of the Torah, which speaks of the seven first days of the world. But not just that, take a look at the first verse in the Torah. It says, Bereshit bara Elokim, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashemayim the et haaretz. So Kabbalistically, it's not a coincidence that it has seven words in the first verse, because all of that is then vacuum-packed into the very first verse as well. So the first verse, in a sense, contains everything we need to know. But anyway, so we're talking about the fact that before we get to the 7,000, we're in the sixth millennia. We're in 5776, but the deadline is 6,000. So 6,000 minus 5,776 puts us at 224 years till the deadline of the 6,000. So we're at, historically speaking, we're at the very end. 224 years sounds like a long time, but in Jewish history or world history, it's a blink of an eye. Because remember, year one is Adam. We're at 5776. Year 6000 is already, Shabbos is coming. So it's already over. Game's over. So we have a very limited window in which to experience the Messianic era. The year 7000, once we enter the 7000, we're no longer in the Messianic era. We're in a whole new era called the world to come. Yeah.
Okay, so this 224 is up until the Messianic era.
It's up until the world to come era.
Yes.
So really, if Messiah would come today, we'd only have 224 years to experience that Messianic era, which we still, the world that we still know, where we can still get our nails done and have to go to work. So that's only 224 years. So the end of that, then the world will fundamentally change, and there's much less we know about that world.
Okay.
Maimonides does not have this whole treatise on that world to come, because the verse in Isaiah says, no eye has seen it except yours, God. We know much less about it. We know it's not. You will no longer be able to get your nails done or go to work.
Similar to the Christians where they
raise all the dead. So it's a Jewish idea. The resurrection of the dead, that's what we discussed it last week. The resurrection of the dead, that's fine. But the resurrection of the dead is in that last period, is in the period of the world to come. But it's not like last night, you know, where you had skeletons coming out of the ground. But rather, it's like a natural birth. It's a birth process where the person will be reborn, but in an adult stage, in a way that will not be like scary or spooky. Yeah.
Are we sure that we're in 5776?
That's a very good question. Is the year 5776 absolute? So no, there's scholarly debate, give or take about 100 years, where we are. And I believe that this is the lower end. We could actually be even closer. Yeah.
I had heard that we lost 400 years from that.
That's 400. I think it's 100 and something.
Okay.
But yeah, there is a question about 100 something years.
We didn't
lose them. It's just a question in the counting system. I couldn't. Yeah, can't tell you the details of that question. But there is a question. All right. But be that as it may, we're clearly, you know, this is the accepted number. We're close to the end either way. And the question is, what does that period look like right before Mashiach comes? We have to be in that period, historically speaking, before Mashiach comes, because the time is now. The time is right.
None of the Navis ever reference how long Mashiach would reign?
I don't know. Nothing else.
I mean, because then you could back into the math.
Yeah. Nothing else. Okay, yeah. Oh, there's a Gemara that says that the period, I'm sorry, the Gemara says that the period of Mashiach could be 2,000 years. In other words, Mashiach, in theory, could have come in the time of Hillel. Should have come in the time in the time of 2,000 years ago would be 2,000 years ago. In the year 4,000. But he didn't, the Gemara said. And because of our sins, he still hasn't come. That's the beginning of the time period.
Okay.
Yeah.
The evangelical, as a group, are hoping that this whole Iran thing comes so that they'll get closer to the point
their prophecy.
We're getting ready to depart and they come in. So I'm not saying it right, I don't think, but that they, there's a group that hopes that the Iran bomb goes off on Israel to bring the end times and the Messiah quicker.
We have friends in the Christian community, and then we have friends who have agendas in the Christian community, and then we have people who are not friends and also have agendas in there.
Yeah.
So we have there's all types in the
Jewish community.
Yeah, that's true also.
Because that I don't understand. I'm working on it. The Jew that everything he stands for, that is anti-Torah.
Well, yeah.
Anti-Torah, but
yeah, we are certainly our own worst enemies. Historically,
yes.
We are certainly our own worst enemies, and you can find examples of that today as well. All right, let's see this last section. We have a little bit of time left. Let's go through it. Birth pains of the Messiah. In the generation when the son of David, the Messiah, will come, the number of Torah scholars will decrease. And as for the rest of the people, their eyes will become worn out through grief and anxiety. Numerous troubles and harsh decrees will be constantly appearing anew. Before the first trouble is over, a second one will hasten to appear. It's a very difficult time, the pre-Messianic era. Number 6, characteristics of the generation. In the generation when the son of David, the Messiah, will come, the face of the generation will be like the face of a dog. So there's a lot of interpretations of exactly what does that mean, that the face of a generation will be like the face of a dog. So Rashi says they'll have no shame. The truth will be absent. Young people will shame the old, and old people will rise before the young. They'll glorify the youth. A daughter will stand against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. That's like the Talmud is saying, could you imagine such a thing, that a daughter-in-law would speak back to her mother-in-law?
Oh, yeah, could, and you, pick up the phone.
Could you imagine such a thing, that the elders would have to honor the youth, that youth would become glorified, like there's something special about the young? And a son will not be ashamed before his father. Insolence will increase, like that's chutzpah. Chutzpah will increase, honor will dwindle. You can start a war, you can stab as many people as you can, and then you could get on the news and not be embarrassed to say that they're killing us. They're executing us when we're trying to stab them. But they're executing us in the street when we're trying to kill them. We need the UN to help us. That's called chutzpah.
This is the age that we're in.
Yeah, that's good. So this might sound... I don't know.
Even now, the word in the 40s, come on, you see, life was almost gone.
True. But if you look at the scholarly works of previous generations, and what's being produced in our generation, it's worlds apart.
But that's every generation.
Right, it's decreasing. But we're reaching a point where there's almost, there's very little innovation. That all the new books that are coming out, I'm talking about scholarly books, right, like by Gadolim, they're culling from earlier books, but there's very little innovation in what they're writing. They're not like saying new ideas in the Talmud.
We know David's heirs.
So that's interesting. Rashi was able to trace himself back to David, the famous Rashi. Maharal was able to trace himself back to David, and they had lots of descendants. I had a kid in my class, Dror Barber, who I still remember his name, and he was able. This is my elementary school class, and I remember the name because I was jealous. Because why? Because he could trace his lineage back to David, and he could be Mashiach. So I was sitting next to a guy like my grandfather was like a dry goods salesman, and his great grandfather, he could be Mashiach. You know, that's not fair. So, anyways, I see a therapist about that every week. Number seven.
We don't know until that person does things, and then we would check their DNA. You could
check. Well, that's a good question. How would we know that they're from David? How would we know? It's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know.
Well, you check DNA. Well, I know, like, there's tribes in Africa.
So again, we do know certain families
to compare to. You don't have a source of David's DNA to compare.
But again, if you could trace back to Rashi Maral, you're pretty much a slam dunk that you're from David.
Yeah.
But by the way, if you're a Kohen, you can't be Mashiach.
Really?
If you're a Kohen or a Levi, you can't be Mashiach.
Wrong tribe.
Wrong tribe, because he was from
David
Judah. Number seven, Israel will bear fruit once again. Box number seven, Rabbi Abba said, there is no clearer indication of the end than this. As it is stated in Ezekiel, but you, O mountains of Israel, you shall shoot forth your branches and bear your fruit for my people Israel when they are about to come. Israel will yield fruit in abundance shortly before the redemption. This is the clearest sign of all that the exile is about to end, Rashi explains. Are we seeing that in our time, where Israel is once again becoming even a net exporter of fruit?
Yes.
The Jaffa oranges. Number eight, return to Israel. One of the most important traditions regarding the Messianic era concerns the ingathering of the diaspora and the resettlement of the land of Israel. There are numerous traditions that the Jewish people will begin to return to the land of Israel as a prelude to the Messiah. The ingathering will begin with a measure of political independence, and according to some, with the permission of other nations. As the holiest spot in the land of Israel, Jerusalem is the most important city that must be rebuilt there. There is a tradition that the ingathering of the exile and the rebuilding of Jerusalem will go hand in hand as the two most important preludes to the coming of the Messiah. According to this tradition, first a small percentage of the exile will return to the Holy Land, and then Jerusalem will come under Jewish control and be rebuilt. Only then will the majority of the Jews in the world return to their homeland. It is thus written, God is rebuilding Jerusalem, then he will gather the dispersed of Israel.
When did Rabbi Kaplan write that?
Rabbi Kaplan lived at... 1948? No. Rabbi Kaplan lived in he died in the 80s. But he was noting the traditions that we have and how credibly they line up with what we're experiencing in our own time. Number nine, technological revolution. Almost 2,000 years ago, the Zohar predicted in the 600th year of the 6th millennia, what year would that be?
5600.
The gates of wisdom on high, and the Zohar, by the way, was written 2,000 years ago. It's writing about a time that's 1,600 years past its writing. The gates of wisdom on high as the wealth will open up, and the wellsprings of the lower wisdom will be open. This will prepare the world to enter the 7th millennium, just as a person prepares himself towards the sunset on Friday for the Sabbath. It is the same here. And the mnemonic for this is the verse in Genesis by Noah, which it says, in the 600th year of the life of Noah, all the foundations of the great deep were split and the water sprouted forth. That was in Noah's life. But that's a mnemonic for the idea that in the 600th year of the 6th millennia, all that wisdom will start pouring into the world. The Zohar predicts with almost uncanny accuracy the onset of the technological revolution. Here we see a prediction that in the Jewish year 5600, the wellsprings of lower wisdom would be opened and there would be a sudden explosion of secular knowledge. Although the year 1840 did not yield any major scientific breakthrough, the date corresponds with almost uncanny accuracy to the onset of the present scientific revolution.
The year 1840 did. 1840 was the invention of the cotton gin, which is considered the beginning of the Industrial Revolution.
1840 was literally
1839 there.
Wow. What's going on in Israel now? It's second leading country of technology.
Yeah.
In the world.
Excellent. Let's go to the next box. The next piece. Rabbi Gamliel sat and expounded the following. The Messianic era, the soil of the land of Israel, is destined to bring forth ready-made bread rolls and fine woolen clothes. So the commentators explain that's an allegory that your needs will be like you can just walk into a place and you can just get clothing and get ready-made bread. You don't have to bake it yourself. You just walk into like a room. It's like it's grown off of trees. Like my kids don't even know that bread comes from the ground. They just think it comes from HEB. So, you know, that's the bracha they make. Hamotzi lechem min ha-HEB. You know, so thank God for HEB coming back. All right, when will the Mashiach...
Don't tell them meat doesn't actually come wrapped in
plastic. Oh, boy. When will Mashiach come? Last box here. So the verse in Isaiah says, I, Hashem, in its time, I will hasten it. How can you be in its on time, but be hastened? So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi noted a contradiction. On the one hand, it is written in its time, which implies that the redemption will occur in its preordained time. But on the other hand, it is written, I will hasten it, which implies that God will bring the redemption before its preordained time. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi revolved this contradiction as follows. He said like this. He said, if the Jews are deserving, I will hasten it. If they are not deserving, the redemption will come in its preordained time. So it's up to us when Mashiach will come. It's totally up to us. Another contradiction posed by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. What? That was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi explaining what the verse means in Isaiah, because the verse is a contradiction. Because the verse on the one hand says it will be early. Right, he's explaining what that verse means in Isaiah. On the one hand it says I'm going to come early, but on the other hand it says I'll be on time. Which one is it? So it depends on us. Number two, another contradiction posed by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. On the one hand it is written, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a man came, at the verse in Daniel, which implies that Mashiach will come swiftly and or miraculously. But on the other hand it is written, a humble man riding on a donkey.
Like that one too.
And Zechariah, so which implies that Mashiach will come sluggishly through a more stepwise process. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi resolved the contradiction as follows. If the Jews are deserving, the Messiah will arrive with the clouds of heaven. It will come in a miraculous way. If they are not deserving, he will come as a humble man riding on a donkey. It will be a process which we seem to be living through, you know, the beginning of that process, at least as per the predictions of the Talmud that we just read on the previous page. I want to share with you just a story. The story is as follows. It's in Sanhedrin. Also, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi met up with Elijah. Elijah, we know, never passed away. And Elijah would appear to the sages of the Talmud regularly. They would all, not all, but many of them recorded incidences where they just had conversations with Elijah, like you and I are having conversations. So he met up with Elijah, and he said, well, when's Mashiach coming? He said, go ask him. He said, where could I find him? He said, you can find him at the gates of Rome. So he goes to the gates of Rome. He says, he's with the paupers and the lepers. So he goes there and he meets up with the person that he described. He told him how you can find him. And he said to him, Shalom Aleichem. He said, Aleichem Shalom. You know, he said his name. He says, Ben Levi. And he knew his name right away. So he said, so he realized he was speaking to the right guy. This is the guy who knows his name, even though. So he said to him, so when are you coming? He said, today. So anyway, so a few months later, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi meets up with Elijah. And he said, so he said, how'd it go when you met up with Mashiach? he said, it was okay. You know, he said to me, Aleichem Shalom, you wished me peace, and he called me by my father's name. He said, first of all, that's good news, because that means you're destined for the world to come, and your father's destined for the world to come. He said, yeah, that's nice, but he's a liar, because he said to me, he's coming today, and that was like 4 months ago. So he said, you misunderstood what he said. He was quoting you a verse in Psalms. The verse in Psalms says, today, if you heed his voice, his with a capital H, if we heed God's voice, Mashiach can come today.
But you have to believe. You
right.
Have been lazy.
If we're worthy. What?
It's the carrot or the stick.
Good. Excellent. So if we're worthy, it will happen in a miraculous way, in a wonderful way. We don't have to go through those birth pains of Messiah, although we've been through a lot of them in our past, in our generation, in the previous generation. But if we are unworthy, so then it won't be today's. But the question, ladies and gentlemen, is ultimately up to us. And to the degree that we lay the groundwork for a world that can accept it and embrace Mashiach and embrace Torah lifestyle, to the degree that we do that, we are also part of that process. We're laying the foundation. We're laying the process of the coming of Mashiach, which God willing be speedily and soon within our days.